Real Marketing Rap is brought to you by Tim Bush and me, Joe Edwards, and we talk about everything marketing. We'll tell you as it is, jargon free and no BS. We'll have guests every week from high rollers to first starters, all from different industries and disciplines within the marketing world. We're here to set the record straight with nothing but marketing realness.
Hey Joe, how's it going? Welcome to episode 3.
Yeah, I'm all good, mate. I'm amazed yet again that we've got into yet another episode, so that's all good.
Check us out, so impressed. We've got another epic one this week, so we're going to be having a pretty detailed conversation with a guy I know really well, Pete Morgan, who's the who's a director at Metier. So Metier are a digital agency that specialise in B2B marketing, and they work with a ton of great tech companies. I used to work with them at Microsoft. They also work with Amazon, Google, Oracle, all the big names in tech, but also a lot of startups. So they're not just kind of the big kind of tech players in terms of who they work with. And yeah, I've worked with Pete specifically for years now, and Metier for probably the last kind of 7 or 8 years. So really impressed with their kind of approach to performance marketing in particular, and just their rigor around always being focused on ROI. And there's a lot of agencies which I'm sure we can all kind of speak to that are quite happy just kind of driving vanity metrics, and Metier don't have that kind of philosophy at all. So I thought it'd be really cool to get Pete on the on this episode, and yeah, just kind of pick his brains a little bit around how they run campaigns, some of their views on the latest kind of trends around social media marketing, and yeah, it's going to be a really great episode.
Cool. And then you were telling me you wanted to maybe have a bit of a rant about customer service, and I was going to try and cover off the GWI digital trends for 2018, and just a little bit of a discussion about campaigns versus always on, kind of spurred from a conversation from Simon Lamy, who's one of my buddies on LinkedIn, who I've had the pleasure with working with as well. So we'll try and cover off some of that as we go.
Yeah, lots to look forward to. So with that in mind, let's dive into the interview with Pete, and then we can get onto my rant and the GWI data, etc. So let's go.
Wicked.
So Pete, welcome to the show. Great to have you on episode 3 of the Real Marketing Rap podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thanks very much for having me. Pleasure.
Good stuff. So obviously we know each other well. We've worked together for the last kind of 5 or 6 years or so. But just for the interests of the listeners, it'd be great if you could maybe introduce yourself and give us a feel for what you're up to at the moment.
Yep, sure. So my name's Pete Morgan. So I work at Metier, which is a global integrated marketing agency. And I lead our demand generation service. So the agency is about 30 years old, got a kind of long track record, working particularly in technology, work with some of the largest technology companies around. And my role in that is, I guess, building demand generation programs that show, can demonstrate business impact for those brands. A core part of that is social media, and also a big focus on data and the role it plays in measuring and improving marketing activity. So I come from a background of economics. That's what I studied at university, and that's the kind of side of marketing that I really enjoy. And my background is social media. I ran a record label, an independent record label, for 10 years, which is how I got into social media. And then when social media matured and businesses started using it a bit more seriously, I was kind of the natural person to pick that up at Metier, and my career has kind of grown from there.
Very cool. And I can't believe I've known you this long and didn't actually realize that you ran an independent record label. How about that?
He works in an agency. Of course he runs an independent record label.
The amount of burgers that we've had over the years, and that little tidbit never came up. So there we go.
We stopped it 2 years ago, actually, around the time my daughter was born, which may have been more than a coincidence. Yeah. But it's that kind of thing that when it's running, you don't really tell people about it. And as soon as it's stopped, you start shouting from the rooftops in case it's forgotten. So, yeah.
Awesome. But cool. So it's very much around your experiences with social media marketing that we're keen to dig into for this episode. And Joe and I come from both a B2B and B2C kind of camp. So as we kind of progress through the show, it'd be good to kind of touch on kind of how both sides of things can kind of perhaps differ, but also what maybe some of the similarities are as well in terms of how brands can take advantage of social media marketing and really use it to drive real ROI and lead generation and ultimately revenue generation as well. So I guess just to kick things off then, I mean, you're very much at the coalface of what's happening, particularly across a lot of really cool and interesting B2B brands. Be interesting to see what some of the key trends that you're seeing at the moment are around the social media marketing space.
Yeah, sure. So I think for me, really, that, you know, social has grown up and it's a mature channel now. And I guess that's the main trend over the last few years has been this understanding that social is it's not anything magic or anything uniquely different from other marketing channels, but it's a marketing channel that you have to take seriously and approach with discipline and rigor to get results out of it. The kind of key trends at the moment are probably similar to what's being seen across the rest of marketing. So that, you know, the three big ones are kind of increased role of data and the role it can play to improve marketing performance. I guess the development of machine learning and AI and how that plays into in social media. And also that kind of a third trend we're seeing more of is around increasing recognition of the importance of awareness. And I say that with a bit tongue in cheek, in that anyone who's got their marketing fundamentals kind of understands that, but maybe the way that the technology is evolving is helping marketers show the value of awareness a bit more. So the increased role of data is that first one, really, is, I think, across B2B and B2C, there has been a shift in the last few years through emerging maturity in social media, but also the advances in analytics technologies that are allowing people to really show ROI from social media investments. So, we talk a lot of my day job is talking around actually making sure we're building programs that track to outcomes and demonstrate business outcomes. So I'm getting away from, inflated vanity metrics and talking around impressions and engagements, which are all well and good, but ultimately mean very little for a business's bottom line. And getting towards actually the numbers that matter and showing how social media can actually play a key role in the marketing mix and really help marketers drive their businesses forward. I think kind of development of machine learning and AI, I obviously listened to your first episode with Dave Copeland, which was fascinating. And I think one of the interesting points he raised, I mean, it was the old Bill Gates quote around people expect, what will happen in the next 2 years. They overestimate what will happen in the next 2 years, but massively underestimate what will happen in 10. And I think in social media, we've seen a lot of tools come along that are starting to bring machine learning and AI to optimize in social media. But again, they're typically optimizing kind of at face-to-face engagement level. And so what you tend to see there is that I used one of these tools not long ago and integrated it with a client's Twitter account, and it told me that they, their sweet spot would be to post photos at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, because that was when the best engagement rate was. And it kind of completely ignored the fact that most of their audience would be asleep at that time. And so it was obviously not a good time to be doing that. And I think where we kind of are with machine learning is we're starting to see tantalizing glimpses of where it can or how it can be applied to social. But I think as the industry moves more towards outcomes, that's really where the value of things like machine learning are. And actually, so getting beyond, let's look at all your past data and see what was a good time to engage, but by linking the full customer journey, so from demand generation channels including social media through to web analytics, marketing automation through to CRM, that's a kind of complex journey. And so the interesting thing, what we're seeing or what's coming around the corner, is how machine learning and AI can be applied to them. And I think that's true of B2B and B2C, but particularly in B2B, where you might be using different social media channels, you're driving different people from different content to different landing pages, and they may, some may be coming from maybe their first kind of point of contact with you, and you're asking them questions, their name, their job title to generate a lead. If they're existing audience, you might be using progressive profiling and technologies like that. And actually, if we can apply machine learning across that entire process and to really understand, to separate, the value of one impression on social media from the other, I think that's where this is going. But I suspect it's probably a few years away.
Sure.
Can I ask a quick question. So that's kind of right down in the minutiae of data and what we want to do with it. What do you have any kind of anecdotal evidence or information or experiences of the board and what, you know, you, these big B2B tech companies, you're, how much importance do they put on social media these days? And, you know, do you have any kind of thing around that?
Absolutely. I think the this is almost another trend that I'll dive into that I wasn't planning to. But I think there's a, you know, marketing in general, there is a huge and growing focus on the need to show business impact. And that holds true for any marketing discipline. I think particularly in social media, where people have been maybe investing on, you know, first mover advantage and just thinking it's a good thing to do. I think what the board and what CMOs are waking up to is the fact that they need to really quickly understand what is the actual business impact of this stuff. So a lot of the conversations we're having with board level marketers, and also actually interestingly in procurement and also in finance as well, is this need to really get to the bottom of what social's doing. And a reason for that, I think there's a lot in the news at the moment around the kind of the failing ad industry, and really, you know, with the duopoly of digital advertising giants in Facebook and Google, combined with kind of traditional media agencies that were incentivized just to spend media in bulk and generate clicks because that's how they got their commission. Actually, I think where we've got to is an industry that isn't necessarily incentivized the best way. And so marketers are waking up to that. CFOs are waking up to that. And the conversation at board level is very much around, okay, what can we do? What tools can we put in place? How can we measure what we're doing to really understand the impact what we're driving? And so that's how, you know, these trends. So the role of data is obvious in that, thinking around how we can apply technologies like machine learning and AI. I think the way to take that to the board is around this, you know, this idea of having to show impact. And these are ways, you know, in the weeds of it, tactics to do that.
That's some fascinating stuff there, and you know, love to dig into a couple of points, particularly around both the data piece and the broader kind of team's development on the horizon, where actually you know, software can actually start replacing you know, folks in teams that would have traditionally done a lot of this stuff hands on. Good to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I enjoy that question around the agencies. I'll have to think carefully around how I answer that. I think, yeah, it comes down a bit to, you know, going back to that Bill Gates quote, though. You know, in the short term, I think what we are seeing is that the marketing, the skills required for a successful marketing team are shifting. You know, a clear example of that, I guess, as an agency, we're kind of at the coalface, and we have a growing team of data analysts in the business, and that's not something we had, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. And the activities we are running for clients, the investments we are running for clients, are generating huge swathes of data. And data alone is meaningless, and it has to be converted into actionable insight to be of any value. And that requires the right skill set. And I think you know, marketers or marketing leaders who are building teams that do not have this function are at risk because they can't interpret that data, or even more dangerously, they interpret it wrongly. I'm very lucky. My dad is a statistician. My sister is a statistician. I'm a marketer, but I can go to them and say, actually, is this sound? Is this valid? and you know, but that is essential. You know, it's essential to my role now. And so, you know, that's something we're building out at Metier, have built out. And I think it's something that, you know, large brands are, if they haven't got in place already, are needing to move quickly on, because otherwise this flow of data is going to be, you know, just too much for them. I think to that second point around the need to, or I guess the future of, you know, impact on employment of AI, I think, you know, I'm agency, so I'm biased, but I think the real role for agencies in this is that, look, the tools of technology are moving so fast, so quickly, it's very difficult to keep up. And you know, that's where we, you know, we partner with our clients. A lot of our role is making sure we have the expertise on the channels, we have the right people in place to capitalize on it. I think in the medium term, that's still going to need to be the place. In the long term, maybe in, you know, particularly if you're thinking high volume and I guess more B2C, where maybe purchase decisions are much quicker on instinct, much simpler, you know, yes, maybe AI comes in and that revolutionizes the teams, the marketing teams built around that. I think B2B is going to be much harder because, you know, we're talking around long purchase cycles, you know, that can be 18 months, a couple years in cases. The huge stakes, you know, deals that are many hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not bigger, you know, trusting that to a to an algorithm is a big move. I think there'll be a it'll take time for marketing leaders, even once the technology arrives, to get there. And as an old saying, you know, you don't get fired for going with, you know, for going with KPMG if you're an accountant. And it's a similar thing here. I think it's going to be a brave marketing leader that is willing to maybe to cut costs by getting rid of all their experts and replace them with a machine. You know, I'm sure in decades to come that may be the case, but for maybe for our own careers, we're happy with that.
But obviously, being on the B2B side of things, I totally agree with you. And thankfully for our careers, it's probably not something we're going to see anytime soon. And just one other quick one before I'm totally monopolising this. Sorry, Joe, and I'll hand
you
over to
you.
Your good self. It's just it's such a fascinating topic. I think one of the areas that I think you obviously can't necessarily just pass to a machine, if you like, is creativity and storytelling and the role that that plays. And you know, I think with all the developments we're seeing around programmatic and machine learning and AI, etc., I think arguably there's even more of a role for the ability to tell and construct great stories. And you know, I think with that in mind, there will always be a place for that creative role within marketing functions, whether it's on the B2B side or B2C. So you know, I take some comfort, I guess, in that, you know, that there's that kind of kernel of creativity, regardless of what's happening across you know, some of these cool technology developments in the MarTech space.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the third trend I mentioned right at the start and had completely forgotten about, so thanks for bringing that back up.
Anytime.
was around the role of awareness. And that, you know, what we see time and time again, and you know, there have been a lot of studies on this. I think there was one recently in the Harvard Business Review. It's around how many you know, absurdly high proportion of purchase decisions that are emotional, and not even just consumer, but in business, that mostly we make decisions on who we want to work with, and then we you know, we get the data or whatever we need to evidence that and make the business case. And I think we're seeing you know, more and more is the recognition that it's all great and well having your, you know, if you're doing programmatic advertising, having that running, but if you're not making that emotional connection at the top of funnel, you're probably not capturing as many individuals as you would like, and you're certainly not, you know, the flow of them through the funnel, you're certainly not converting as many as you want. And a lot of the work we're doing with clients is helping them establish that emotional connection. So we're doing a huge amount of video work, for example, which is all around really focusing on the motivations and the kind of the incentives that are required to drive an action from the audience, and then building out all of that kind of discipline and structure and technology behind that to then capture it and make the most of it through social media, through lead capture, and then onto marketing automation. And I think, you know, smart clients, things like multi-channel attribution, which is new analytics technology, which lets you really understand, actually, not just it's not just the last thing that drove action, but you know, if someone came to my website or saw my TV ad and then 3 months later bought my product, multi-channel attribution promises to give marketers a better understanding of that and the impact that, you know, awareness brings. And so I think over the next few years, marketers are going to start to be able to have data points that help them build business cases around awareness. And I suspect that marketers will be spending a lot more of their budget on awareness in years to come than they currently are.
Yeah, and I guess the marketing automation tools are helping with that as well, in terms of monitoring that digital body language and you know, scoring prospects when they interact with assets and content through that kind of awareness journey, and ultimately then using that data to create, you know, marketing qualified leads, etc. So again, you know, there's a nice role for technology to play there. But Joe, are you seeing similar kind of stuff in the B2C space at all?
Yeah, so I was going to ask actually if you've got much, because I've worked in both. I'm currently sitting in like consumer land, running a campaign out the door at the moment that we're reaching tens of millions of people, and that is one of our success metrics. Yeah, I remember sitting in agency land doing some work on social selling and LinkedIn, and we were happy with 20. So I mean, my question's more not so much to do that, because we all know there are differences, but is there anything that, where you look at the consumer world and go, I can really learn something here, and vice versa? Do you think there's places where in the B2B world you think consumer marketers can learn a thing or two?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that last point around, you know, the need for an emotional connection is something that is kind of common knowledge in consumer, and is something that has been at the core of consumer campaigns since forever. And I think, you know, you look at, we're coming up to Christmas, you look at advertising on the TV, John Lewis ad, for example, it's all about trying to build an emotional connection with you and to make you feel warm and fuzzy inside, because John Lewis and their agency know that if they can do that, they've got a far greater chance of you walking through the door and doing your shopping with John Lewis, or going online, as the case may be. And I think that's something that B2B marketers have to learn, is this idea that I cannot just be talking around, you know, technical details and hoping that will win me the contract, because that's not how it works. And anyone who's in a sales role knows that the sale is all around building up a rapport and having that emotional connection. And I think that's something that B2B marketers need to quickly harness and bring into their campaigns. I think the other way around, absolutely is what B2B can teach consumer. I think we're already seeing that, which is the more of a focus, I think, on outcomes. So, the point you made there around the small numbers, and often when we're talking with B2B clients, we're talking about the small numbers that matter. And actually, if they're selling something that is, you know, in the multi-million dollars, they may only need a few deals more to hit their target, and they're happy. And so to get those few deals, they can't have many missed opportunities. And so, you know, if you scale that up the funnel to get, say, two deals, you might only be talking around, doing this off the top of my head, but, 100 good leads at kind of top of funnel. And you haven't got many chances to qualify the right ones and to do what you need to do to move them through the funnel. And actually, if you don't approach that with discipline and with rigor, you will have too many missed opportunities. You just can't make your number. And I think when you're, you know, what consumer land can learn from that is that, you know, you may be starting with, 60, 70 million people in the UK, but actually you need to approach it with the same rigor and discipline. And there's a huge upside. If we can approach every step of the funnel the same way, we're seeing brands doing this, bringing marketing automation on consumer where they've got databases of many millions of people. And I think that is the kind of discipline that is coming from B2B that consumer can learn from and is learning from, and that can drive a huge upside for them.
Cool. That is a good answer. I like that one.
Thank you.
Nice one. So mindful of time, so I've got a couple of other quick ones just to run through. If you were going to offer advice to marketing leaders as they go into their FY18 planning, what kind of percentages of budget would you be talking to them about in terms of allocating to social media marketing? Obviously, I'm coming more from a B2B side, but again, you know, if you've got any thoughts on kind of percentages on the consumer side of the table as well.
Yeah. I think that you probably won't be pleased now. I don't think there's an easy answer there. I think it's going to be different for every business. And I think there's a set of steps that marketers need to run through before they can get there. And that's, I think, A, understanding where your audience is, both where they're active, but also where they're receptive. And, you know, thinking B2B, we run a lot of campaigns across all the main social media channels. Often, in terms of finding the audience there, you can find them on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, take your pick, but actually where they're receptive and open to learning about you and reading your content can differ. And we run a lot of campaigns where it's LinkedIn that works well for that and not Twitter, and others it's vice versa. Sometimes Facebook throws up a wild card and is absolutely brilliant for B2B. But I think you need to put the legwork in and look at the data to really understand where your audience is, where they're receptive, to give you a bit of a framework to start from. I think you then need to think around, you know, what are your business objectives, and trying to then build a strategy that is actually well placed to meet those goals. So choosing the right kind of channels based on where your audience is, the cost of those channels, the likelihood to actually getting people to do what you want through them. And then to start, you know, effectively look at your plan, look at your objectives and work out, okay, what realistically how many of these, you know, leads that I need to generate or revenue I need to generate I can actually get from this audience. And if you find that, you know, you've only, you actually look on LinkedIn and only 500 of your audience are on there, and you know it's far bigger than that, then maybe LinkedIn isn't the right approach. And then I think, so that's kind of picking out how to actually go about utilizing the channels. You then need to have the data in place to actually measure them. And so measure really early, measure throughout the campaign, and then adjust your plan as you go, and not being kind of arrogant enough to think, okay, right, I know these channels, I'm going to start and spend, you know, X percent of my budget on LinkedIn and X percent on Twitter, and that's what I'm going to do, because that might not work. And every campaign and audience is different. And so it's about looking at your plan as you go and frequently updating it and setting expectations with leadership that is just how social media works. It is how you should be utilizing data. And that's kind of life these days. And I think my last point on this is actually just around, I guess, the balance between acquisition and existing customers. And that I think the marketer's tendency is often to think around social media marketing as a key channel to drive acquisition, and acquisition being a huge priority. But actually, there's a lot of narrative in industry press at the moment around actually is that the right focus? And Web Summit in Lisbon a few weeks ago, the CEO of Sprinklr, his view was that actually 80% of revenue for most companies could come from 20% of existing customers. So I think it's thinking of things like that and then working out how social can support that. And the great thing about social is it can support acquisition of new audience, but you can also integrate with your database and target existing ones. So it kind of aware that's a very long-winded answer, but I think it's about assessing your business, assessing where your audience is and the channels, and then making sure you have the framework in place to actually measure and make sensible decisions. And what I will tell you is, if you do that, then come to next year's planning, you will be in a much better position to understand actually what investments do I need to make to reach my target. And that's helpful, obviously, to plan your business, but also to set expectations with management and to help you in any arguments you need to have around the budget required to do that.
We talked about like the year of Twitter and the year of mobile and the year of this and the year of that in our marketing world. I feel like we're definitely getting closer, or if we're not already in it, of the year of the data scientist. I just think like numbers rule everything right now. Like the way that we can measure everything, but that's one thing. But then it's like, what are we going to measure to even begin to define out how we build our budgets out and all that kind of stuff? I mean, it is amazing what we can learn. And I still don't think today enough people spend their time learning about what they're doing to then influence what they're about to do.
Absolutely. And I think it is difficult. It makes life difficult because I say this a lot because of the job I have, but 5 years ago, the campaigns we were running and marketers were running, you set it up with a great idea, you put the strategy together and it looked good on paper, and you let it go, and then down the line you looked at how it worked. And and now the reality is, we plan campaigns, we put them into market, and very quickly we have an idea if they're working or if they're not. And that is, it increases the pressure, it's high stress. And there's a huge amount of upside, though, in that you don't, I say this to my team, but there's no excuses for running a campaign that is not successful anymore. Because at the very, very least, we should be providing incredibly valuable insight based on real world data. That if we're running a lead generation campaign and actually it doesn't generate the leads required, there's a reason for that. And we will have the data in place to be able to tell a client, actually the people you're trying to target aren't interested in this, or the content wasn't valuable enough to incentivize them to part with the details, or as we've had in recent cases, your lead capture form is just too complex and people are dropping off. And I think that's a huge opportunity for marketers, data, and why data has such a great role to play.
You don't have to name the clients.
Yeah.
The risk is just that, this, it takes marketing to a different world. It takes it into statistics, and there are, as there is, I imagine if many marketers showed statisticians what they were doing with the data, the statisticians would be horrified. And there is a kind of a recognition to realize, okay, right, if we come from a marketing background, we are not data scientists, and we need to bring those people in. So I think you're right. It's not just the year of data, it's the year of the data scientist.
No, totally. And I think also ego kind of plays a huge role in this as well. I see time and time again, leaders within a business, launch an initiative based on some assumptions, gut feel, past experiences, etc., and often don't listen or gain insight from what the data is actually telling them, because of that kind of assumption that they had when they went into a campaign. And I think successful marketeers moving forward are going to be those that actually do look at the data quickly, often, and make decisions around what they're seeing in that data and iterate their campaigns accordingly. But I do see time and time again that ego just gets in the way of all of that, because they don't like to be shown to be wrong.
Yeah, you're right. I think the what I always say to that and the guys here is, you know, data wins arguments. And
totally.
The key thing is making sure now that any campaign you're running, whether it's social media marketing or really any marketing, that you have a measurement framework in place and you have the data that you can measure. You tracked everything and then you analyze on the back end to work out actually what were the interesting points. And that should lead us towards, you know, that negates some of the ego piece, because even, you know, working with and again, I won't name clients, but working with marketing leaders with big egos, and also, you know, and some of them rightly so, they've had huge experience of their audience and their sector. But if you can show the data that proves that maybe it's different from what they think, or that they should try other things, that does win arguments. And I think that would be my advice to any marketers is think around how data can actually help you do a better job and surface the value of what you're doing.
Awesome. Ooh. Awesome. Now that's great stuff, Pete. Really, really appreciate that. Mindful of time. Anything from you, Joe, or should we?
No. I think we should wrap up. I feel like I want to cut this episode on the year of the data scientist.
I think that's definitely the quote to take out of this. That's for sure.
Totally.
Good stuff. So just before we go, Pete, how do people find you? What's your Twitter handle? Any resources you want to kind of plug, promote, etc. at the moment?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter. I'm twitter.com/ Pete Defeat, PETEDAFEET. So I hang up from the music days. And you can find us at Metia at Metia.com. So METIA.com. If you go to our download section, we've got a kind of huge number of white papers. We've got some more coming up over the next few months. We'll be doing a kind of marketing trends one for 2018, where I imagine a lot of the topics discussed on this call will be in there. Maybe we'll call it the year of the data scientist. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thanks again. Really appreciate it. All right. Chat to you guys soon. See ya. Bye-bye.
So, Pete, I'm loving the, you know, year of the data scientist. I'm just about to hire one on my team, and I'm really, really interested, given the fact that numbers hurt my head. I think I said that just before the podcast. I'm really interested to see what that person brings and what it brings for us all in the future.
Yeah, no, it was a fascinating conversation with Peter. So I'm a big, big fan, and I've known him for some time now. And I just love their kind of real kind of laser focus on ROI. And it's, you know, fascinating here about this whole kind of view of the data scientist. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of the marketing kind of team being dedicated to that side of things. So it was a really great interview, and hope everyone kind of got a lot out of it. I know I did.
Cool. Well, it's about time we got on with your rant.
So I don't normally go on many rants, but it seems like this the last couple of weeks or so, seems like all of the brands that I seem to interact with seem to really be messing stuff up in a big, big way. And for anyone that knows me well, I'm a huge Starbucks fan. Like, I literally go in there probably twice a day. And I've got a local branch where I live in Southfield, and they had a sign outside and both in the store saying that if you bought a coffee at home kind of item, so, you know, ground coffee, the little Starbucks via kind of sachets, etc., then you got a free tall coffee. You know, it was advertised all over the place. So in I went. I needed to get some more coffee. In fact, the Starbucks blend was out, so I thought, oh, you know, let's get into the festive spirit early on the coffee front. And asked for my free coffee, and they're like, oh, no, that actually was yesterday. you know, despite the fact the signage was still all over the store, and I literally go into this place like daily, and they know me well. Although actually, the cashier was new, so didn't actually know.
I tell you what, you are proper naming and shaming here.
I know. Yeah, yeah.
Don't hold back, mate.
Exactly. I was like really annoyed, and wait till I get on to the second part of this rant as well. So anyway, they opened this book, they started pressing around on a few buttons on the till, and they're like, nope, we can't give it to you. And point blank refused to basically honour this offer that was promoted throughout the store. And while fair enough, the offer had actually expired, it was a one day only thing, it kind of got me thinking about, you know, customer loyalty, and how easy it is to actually kind of erode away years worth of kind of customer satisfaction and loyalty, etc., particularly in a market is actually quite fickle and super competitive. So, you know, I left that Starbucks branch feeling, you know, a little bit kind of, you know, down on Starbucks, and you know, actually kind of really got me thinking about, you know what, you know, it's not like they actually have the best coffee in the world, and you know, it's convenient, etc., but you know, that was a pretty poor experience. So that then kind of led me into another situation the following week, where I went into Pret. Again, big fan of Pret, particularly around Christmas with the Christmas sandwich. So this was actually around the time that the sandwich launched. So
you're going to tell me it had chicken and not turkey or something?
That would be fighting talk. Honestly, there would have been more of a situation actually than what happened. But anyway, so there's a big queue, it's a city branch. So I pick up my sandwich. I'm standing in the queue, and I thought, actually, you know what? Let's just do like a little picture and post to Instagram, you know, going all, you know, first Christmas sandwich of the season and all the rest of it. So out came my phone. I take a picture, and this woman ran over to me saying, "You cannot be taking pictures in here. How dare you, need to delete that picture right now." And I was like, are you joking? They're like, "Nope, we have a no photo policy in here." I was like, okay. So I was so taken back. I didn't want to kind of, you know, fight my corner or explain. Actually, I just wanted to post a picture to Instagram. But once again, there's another example of actually, you know, a kind of interaction with a member of staff that actually kind of made me feel pretty bad about the brand. And also, while I'm not exactly, you know, a big Instagram kind of celebrity by any means, you know, me
we're
posting that
it, mate.
Exactly, yeah, baby steps.
Send us into celebrity status, yeah.
Indeed.
We'll be Z1 before
exactly
before you can say it.
Hilarious. But again, you know, it would have been kind of free advertising for them. And actually, you think, you know, places like Starbucks or any kind of, you know, food establishment or whatever should be actively encouraging people to kind of post pictures, talk about their brand, talk about their products, etc. And again, it just seemed a little short-sighted. And just you expect more from brands like Starbucks and Pret that actually, you know, have been built on kind of good customer service. And, you know, particularly in the case of Pret, actually, I thought, anyway, we're quite a social media savvy brand. So,
it's a little Gen Z, as we'd say in the buzzword trade. it's not good, is it, mate?
I know. And I know it seems pretty trivial, but, you know, I guess in terms of how that relates to marketing, it's just that kind of focus on every interaction, you know, as trivial as it might be, can actually have a real difference. And, you know, I think whether you're in B2B or B2C, you know, just having that kind of real focus and dedication on ensuring that every interaction with your customer is a positive one, and one that also thinks about the bigger picture. So, like, you know, in the case of Starbucks, okay, the free coffee offer was had expired, but actually, would it have killed them to just turn around and go, "Oh, you know what, here's a free filter coffee, you know, sorry about the, you know, inconvenience or whatever." And I would have left thinking, actually, that was pretty cool, but, you know, actually I left feeling the complete opposite. So
I've actually had experiences with brands that have actually kind of done the complete opposite to what Starbucks have done, where they've realized that kind of they've not necessarily made a mistake, but they've wanted to just improve like the kind of customer experience. Yeah, I had a problem with a power pack on a certain fruit-related product, and it was outside of warranty, and they just swapped it.
Nice, yeah. Again, that's how it should be. I mean, you know, you're a lifelong customer of that company, and you know, what's it to them in the grand scheme of things, you know? And again, you felt you walked away feeling really great about that company, we'll continue to spend more money than we should, I'm sure,
on electronic products,
exactly.
Yeah.
So rant over anyway.
Cool. So I'll get on to my my one. So GWI have just released their digital trends for 2018. And the reason I slipped in Gen Z was this is one of the key areas that they've decided to focus on as part of digital trends for this report. Gen Z, for those of you who don't know, is 16 to 20 year olds. And again, you know, trying to break some of the buzzwords just so we know what we're talking about. I think it's well worth going down and having a read. I think the two things that I've pulled out is it would appear that these 16 to 20 year olds have finally reached the tipping point of what we'd kind of actually determine as mobile first. So in other words, they are spending more time on their mobile devices than they are desktop devices. So I think that's like, finally, we're kind of there, or we're getting there. Maybe they're not the vast majority of the population around the world yet, but it won't be too far before that happens. So that to me is quite interesting. And then being now in the sports industry, one of the things that I kind of picked up on was looking at the consumption of sports online versus sports on TV. And right now, it's about, you know, most people are watching a kind of like, I don't know, 4.5. I don't know how you watch a half, but we'll go with it anyway. But like 4.5 sports are watched on TV by an average individual versus online, which is about 2.5. So it's kind of interesting to see that you can imagine there's a lot more avidity or avidness for like your sport online. So if you're an avid fan, you're going to consume that piece of content possibly more online than you will. You'll be more casual if you're viewing, like, so I'd imagine what you view on TV is the same as what you view online, but there's a couple of other sports sitting in the background on TV that you might be watching. So I thought that was kind of interesting for me, given all the kind of rights shenanigans that's going on with the likes of Twitter and Facebook and everybody trying to get in on the kind of sports rights action. Another interesting thing for me was speaking with a colleague saying how GWI Date is a bit of a Mickey Mouse kind of show, and he doesn't believe a word of it. but you know, like all numbers, you've got to start somewhere, and for me, like, there's no smoke without fire. I think I'm a firm believer of that. You've really got to start somewhere with the numbers. So it's kind of interesting to see that.
No, that's cool. And I think the whole kind of shift to mobile, and particularly around kind of sports consumption, and you know, I think particularly as people's kind of taste in sports being so diverse and quite niche in some cases, it's fine for football, etc. But if you're into, I don't know, jiu-jitsu or BMX biking or skateboarding, etc., they're not typically well covered by the likes of Sky, etc. So you almost have to turn to online to kind of get access to that kind of content. And then I guess online also offers all sorts of interesting kind of collaboration opportunities around those sports. So again, helping bring communities together, etc., far easier than you can through through traditional TV. So it's quite an interesting one, I think.
Yeah. And then my other one was a comment from a guy called Simon Lamy. I really hope I've pronounced your surname right, Simon. But yeah, he had a comment on LinkedIn, and he was basically having a bit of a rant about kind of always on versus campaign-led big ideas. And it was just, this has always been quite close to my heart. Sometimes always on related content can be deemed as a bit of churn, which is a shame, because I'm sure as much effort and thought goes into some of this content as, the big creative idea. I think I've spent quite a bit of time now trying to see how the two coexist, and I believe they can do. I think they have different purposes in life. You know, campaigns should be there to drive that spike of activity for a very important moment in your business's calendar, for whatever that might be, whether it's a new product launch, or in my world, it's a new basketball competition or set of competitions. That was your watch that just interrupted me. That's amazing.
Mental note for the next show. Better mute that one.
Yeah. I do think the two can coexist. I do also believe that we should put more effort, more creative effort into our always on content. But equally, I believe campaigns should try to stop some of the peaks and troughs happening that we do see within our marketing metrics. Like, so it's like, how do we find that balance that campaigns have a massive amount of creativity, but always on that have got to keep the lights on, because that's the world we're in today. And I just think we've got to work out what the balance is, what the purposes are, and that kind of stuff. And I'd be interesting to hear if anybody fancies, I'm going to try this, if anybody fancies tweeting either Tim or myself on this kind of subject of kind of high creative campaigns versus always on content, and what do they think about it, what are their views, how do they use it. I'd be really interested to hear that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's probably an interesting kind of theme for a future episode. And I guess actually Pete, even on this episode, kind of talks that to a point, in that, you know, particularly just from social media marketing's perspective, we're seeing organic reach, you know, probably dropping to only about 5% really, you know, with all the main kind of channels almost throttling that kind of organic outreach. And obviously then meaning that that paid is pretty much the only way to go. And I think the most effective way to kind of manage that is almost from an always on perspective. So, you know, I think there's actually some interesting points even just in this week's show that kind of support some of that thinking. But, you know, I think it's such a broad, you know, topical area that I think, you know, let's definitely perhaps table that one for a future show.
Yeah, definitely. So is there anything else from you?
No, you know what? I think my rant's probably enough for this week. I don't normally go on rant, so I think we'll perhaps save it from there. But no, I think this has been a really great episode, and really looking forward to the next one, which actually is going to be our Christmas special, where we're going to be critiquing you know, Christmas adverts, or as if we can actually get a date in any way between now and the
I think we've
Christmas.
Done it. I hope we've done it. Yeah. I hope we've done it. Maybe we've just come up with a real marketing rant section. I feel like we could have something there.
You could be something.
I reckon that needs to become a staple segment of the show.
Definitely. Awesome. No, it's just been a great one. And I guess one last thing today is just if folks that are listening enjoyed it, then it'd be great to get a review on iTunes. Obviously, ideally a 5-star review. And also love to get feedback through Twitter, etc., through and all the usual channels to both Joe and I.
Yeah, all 6 listeners now.
Indeed, yes. Well, domination next.
So. Yeah. Nice one. Cheers, Tim.
Good stuff. All right. Take it easy. Till the next one.
Thanks for listening to Real Marketing Wrap. And if you like what you heard, don't forget to share the word. You can follow Joe on Twitter @BrandJoe and Tim @TBush. Big shout out to DJ Tigerstyle for the music. You can check him out on DJTigerstyle.com. For more about us, join our WhatsApp group. You can check that out on realmarketingwrap.com. Peace out, people, and keep it real till next time.
The bloopers.
You guys haven't met, have you? So
no.
Joe's my co-host, shall we say, for
shit,
the podcast.
That sounds official.
Yeah, I know. Very official, doesn't it? But
first one was great. I thought really interesting.
Good. Oh, I'm glad you liked it.
He's a fascinating guy, isn't he?
I love Dave Coplin. Yeah. He's so cool.
He's definitely got a voice for radio as well. Like,
I know.
His voice was just like, oh my God.
Don't put the pressure on there then.
No. none at all.
That was how Tim and I started our chat around faces for radio. So if I haven't got a face or a voice for radio, then.
Yeah, I've got a face of radio and a voice for medium, I think. So I'm kind of screwed both ways.
Love it.
There we go.
Wow, that is possibly the geekiest joke I've heard in a while.